And our guests this morning, Steve, as we have been talking to them and we're really excited about this conversation, Dave Potter, Executive Director of the Family Partnership Center, and he will introduce the nice folks he brought with him. Dave is a New Englander. He's born in Worcester, Massachusetts. Has been married to his wife, Patricia, for 42 years, three adult children, three grandchildren, all living in the Boston area. Undergraduate degree in accounting at Northeastern University in Boston, with an MBA at Eastern Michigan, is a CPA, worked as a tax executive and CFO for 25 years in large corporations, is a former president of Junior Achievement in Massachusetts for 7 years, is now the executive director of Family Partnership Center since 2002. And Dave, welcome, and please introduce our other guests, and then we want to talk a little bit about the Family Partnership Center and what you folks are doing.
Thank you, Larry, and thanks to WSLR for having us in today. With me today is Terry Wallace. Terry is a senior parenting educator. Terry's been with us over 4 years right now, and has terrific skills in terms of helping families. In particular, dealing with parents in their relationship with their children. Terry previously worked with Easter Seals for 8 years as a center director and has close to 20 years of experience in working with families, in particular families with physical and mental challenges. So Terry's terrific. Also with us today is Michelle, a client of Terry's, who's worked with us for close to a year right now, and also a terrific person, and Someone who we've been able to help, and I think she's been able to help us as well in working with her family. We've learned from Michelle, and hopefully she's benefited from working with Terry as well.
Welcome. Tell us a little bit then, if you will, Dave, about the Family Partnership Center. What's your work, and how do you get it done?
Okay, Larry. Started in the early 1990s, long before I got there, two or three people who had a real passion, social workers, educators, health workers, had a real passion for children. But uniquely, they thought the best way to help children in prevent abuse or really strengthen the quality of life for children was through the parents. So they focused on that, and that's 17 years ago. This year we'll work with over 1,000 families, once again focusing strictly on the parents. And that's the way to not only prevent child abuse, but to strengthen the overall family.
How do people come to you, and or how do you find them?
The best client, Larry, is the one that calls us on the phone themselves. That's called a self-referral. Over 90% of our clients work with us voluntarily. They refer to churches, provider organizations, just throughout the community, having done this for 17 years and hopefully being pretty good at it. We just get a lot of referrals that way there. The other 10% are the cases that are referred by the authorities.
What are they presenting with? Why do they call you in the first place?
I think there's several reasons. One, I don't think we've ever met a parent that didn't love their child, and that goes without exception. Times are tough, especially right now is a good example. They're presented with economic challenges, whether it be foreclosures, unemployment, various challenges, and I think people are looking for information. One of the most important things they'll do in their life is raising their children, and they want to do it well. And the people that call us and work with us have acknowledged that they need help. They're not too proud to ask for help. And that's one of the challenges we have, is to get people to ask us for help. We're free. We're master's level. We want to help them.
Well, let me ask you then, Terry. People are coming, and then before they are actually in a crisis situation, they're in a crisis situation, they're feeling a high degree of stress, or... I mean, give me an example. There's single parents who...
Okay, we have a variety of families that call us. I've had families that I've worked with, say, a mom who was from China, and she had a baby that she was raising in this country, no family here. So she just wanted some help as far as someone that could help her. The child was colicky, someone that could give her some ideas, as far as what was normal, what was not normal, some things that she could do to help this baby. A lot of the parents that call us, they're very good parents. They have questions. They're not professionals. We don't have courses in parenting where we have courses and everything else. We have courses to get a driver's license. We have to take a course for different professions. But for parenting, there's no courses. So a lot of the parents that call us, they just have different questions. I've also had a parent that had an adolescent child who called and said, I don't know what's happened to my child. I had this perfect child, and all of a sudden she's turned into a monster. I don't know what to do with her.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So it's just a variety. And then, you know, we also have, I work with a whole lot of families that have children with disabilities, and that could range from autism to somebody with ADHD. Schools refer a lot of families.
See, go ahead. Yeah, so you mentioned that kids don't come with manuals, and there are no courses that you can take, really, to become a parent. I guess the only experience that people have is how they were brought up. Is that an issue?
Yes, that can very much be an issue. I work with many, many families who parents who did not have positive role models themselves. And so they were kind of lost as far as what to do because of that. And so they're either repeating the same mistakes that their parents made with them, or they're trying to do the opposite, but they need some help. They sometimes just need validation that they're doing the right thing.
And in some cases, the parents were abused when they were children, correct?
Many of the parents that I've worked with were abused, either physically, emotionally, many sexually. Very many have.
So that kind of starts a cycle, right? Is that something that's hard to break?
It absolutely does start a cycle. And so what I do with these parents is I work with them on skills one at a time, and a lot as far as helping them feel good about themselves, encouraging them with what they are doing, noticing when they're using positive parenting skills. And that goes a long way. I think being positive and encouraging parents.
And one of the statistics, I'm sorry, just one, is that it may take several generations to break a cycle of child abuse. I thought that was interesting, correct?
That is correct, and that's why it's so important, the work that we do, because we're working with these parents and working on the parenting skills, working on helping them, encouraging them to take care of themselves, to stay calm, to do things as far as handling their own anger, things that can help them as far as healthy ways of dealing with their emotions, and just individually working with them one step at a time where they're at.
It sounds like a lot of the calls you get are from parents with specific questions, such as, my kid seems to be derailing either academically or behaviorally or something like that. And they would call, and then what happens then? And let me turn to Michelle, because you're a client. Something led you to call these folks, and tell us a little bit about how you got plugged into them and what your experience has been like.
Sure. Good morning. Thanks for having us here. My situation was pretty specific, and my son was having a lot of trouble in school. His behavior was out of control, and pretty much everyone was telling me that he was ADHD and he needed to be put on drugs, and I was not okay with that. That was an answer that was not going to work for me. I am a recovering addict myself, and so the thought of putting him on a drug as an answer was contrary to everything that works for me. I don't think that we get to solve our problems by taking a drug. It sure didn't work for me. And so
don't you find that the drugging of American children is just a huge tide to try to fight against?
I think it is so prevalent in our society that it really bothers me. And I wanted another answer. And I was willing to do absolutely anything but that. And I told you know, everybody that was trying to tell me this was the only way, that I felt that there had to be other ways. And I felt that his problems were not chemical, but were behavioral. And I wanted to accept responsibility because I thought that my behavior was what problems were what was causing his behavior problems, and I wanted to accept responsibility for that.
So you called the center, and you got introduced to Terry in this case?
Yes, and she helped me realize that what I was trying to do was I was trying to control my child, and I was ineffective. Nobody wants to be controlled. I don't want to be controlled. Do you want to be controlled, Larry?
I had raised two teenage children, and I think that any parent who thinks they have any control after puberty is probably on some kind of drug themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. And so she let me know that, you know, my aggressive behavior in trying to control this person was ineffective. And she started providing me with some really simple tools, helping me set small, attainable goals that were realistic, that were so helpful and so easy that we could begin reaching them. You know, and once I started reaching those goals and my son started reaching those goals, we both started feeling really good about ourselves and the program started working for us.
But you're saying she also helped get your son engaged or committed to a certain process, which at that age is kind of remarkable itself.
Exactly, because he's 6 when he started, and he's almost 7 now. Because we've been with the program for almost a year. We've been working at this almost a year. Me being a better mom lets him be a better child.
All right, and you're listening to WSLR. Let me just break in here. 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, your community radio station. This is The Surreal News, and we're talking to people associated with the Family Partnership Center for the Prevention of Child Abuse.
I just to follow up from your point of view, Terry, when Michelle and you began, when you first heard from Michelle, how did you read this situation and decide what kind of a relationship you needed to develop with her? I mean, you'd assume that you do classes as well as individual mentoring.
Right.
So what went through your mind to say, this is what we're going to do together, and what was that you decided to do with her?
Okay, what we do when we go in home is we have a whole lot of paperwork that we go through. There's a child behavior inventory that Michelle fills out on her child, and that basically goes through a whole lot of behaviors, and she marks those behaviors on a scale of 1 to 10. And then also puts down whether they're a problem or not for her. So that gives me something to work on right now. What behaviors Max is exhibiting, what we need to work on. And if it's a problem for her or not, that tells me how it is for her and where she is in the situation, where she is in the equation. So that gives me a whole lot. And we also fill out paperwork. We go through her growing up as a child, her past situations. So that gives me a whole lot of information. And then at the Family Partnership Center, we have a library with all sorts of literature. So I try to match up the particular literature. It's like an individual curriculum for each family that I work with. So each week I go into the library and try to match up literature that will help her. Power struggles were a huge thing with Michelle and her son. They were constantly, you know, butting heads and getting into power struggles. He's a very intelligent young man with a very large vocabulary, and he knew how to push her buttons. And so that was something that we really, really worked on. And what was great about Michelle is she really wanted to look at herself, and she took responsibility for her part in Max's behavior and how she was parenting, and she wanted to learn new skills. She wanted to change. She was able to look at herself, and that's huge.
Let me ask Dave, you have wonderful people like Terry, and I assume they're volunteers, or at least some of them are volunteers. What kind of training do the folks like Terry need to have to work with you? Are they social workers, or they have backgrounds in nursing, or they have backgrounds as psychologists or some other professionals, or
I think the criteria, once again, I'm a retired CPA, so I'm maybe not the best person to ask, but my criteria is a strong, sensitive, caring person. Our staff currently comes from education, social work, and healthcare. But you listen to Terry talk, what you hear is a good listener, first of all. Terry's has learned, you know, we all have one mouth and two ears, and sometimes we speak more than we listen. Terry helps us customize every case. She listens first and builds a trust and a credibility with people like Michelle, and that's what makes her effective. We customize every single case we work with, which means Michelle is a very strong woman, a strong parent who happens to be strong enough to admit an addiction. Most of the people we deal with don't have that background. We're dealing with people without addictions. We're dealing with people that we're trying to preach the normalization of parenting education. It's available for everybody, and therefore, looking for the staff, we're looking for a staff that's has those kind of skills. For example, bilingual. We have staff. We have 50% of our staff speak Spanish right now. Right? Mm-hmm. We have a staff that focus on special needs. We have a wide variety of skills, which enables us to customize every case. If we get a call and we don't think Terry can handle that case, which is a rarity, we'll assign to somebody else that has more experience in that area.
I think the question that I'm asking also has to do with the trust that someone would have in calling you, that they're going to be assigned a qualified, trained, experienced professional and not someone who's going to offer homespun truths about, you know, spare the rod and spoil the child or
Terry
sounds to me like someone who's coming at this situation from a very professional, analytical kind of a way rather than someone who's just kind of out there, you know, trying to give some homespun advice.
Well, I think that's very true. And without being condescending of other agencies that do a wonderful job in providing counseling and support, these people that started this agency 17 years ago identified specifically parenting education and support as a profession by itself, and it's just kind of evolved this idea of we never plan on doing anything but parenting, Larry. That's all we're going to do is be parenting educators.
The underlying focus here is prevention of child abuse, strengthening families for the kids. What about your measures of success? It would seem like that would be a difficult thing to do. How do you know if you're doing a good job?
That's a terrific question. Once again, being a CPA, I'm used to being able to identify items, tangible items, in measuring bottom line. And I've learned sometimes the hard way over the last number of years that when you're working with families, the intangibles are very difficult to measure. One of the challenges we have is to be able to measure better than anybody else is doing it in supporting our requests to our funders. And I think we're doing a good job of that. You don't put cameras in homes. It's against the law, and it's inappropriate. Absent that, you do surveys, you do tests. But I think the way we have a lot of outcomes and indicators that we use and we document. But I think the way we tell whether we're making a difference or not is by asking the parenting educators who look in the eyes of these clients on a weekly basis and talk to them more often than that. The parenting educators like Terry can tell whether we're making a difference, and they can fill out all the reports, but they know deep down instinctively whether we've made a difference.
I want to just ask a couple of questions of a particular type of situation. It seems to me that broken families or families, couples who are going through a divorce or whose relationship is breaking up, put their kids at particular risk. And as I know so many people who have gone through a divorce with kids who are of various ages and appreciate particularly that the older the kid is, the more vulnerable they are, which is kind of counter what you think, because younger kids usually tend to be more adaptable. In any event, do you have a particular protocol or intervention or a specific way of trying to, my word for it, help establish a child-centered divorce where people are not triangulating and using the kids as manipulating the kids as tools between each other, and trying to help parents who inevitably may have to break up the family? It's not like saying we don't understand that divorce happens, but to try to preserve the health of the child through that process.
I'm going to comment on that, and I'm going to turn it over to Terry, the expert talking about it. my perspective, and Terry may disagree with me, is that it's not that hard. I think people, let's use a divorce as an example, sure, the kids suffer and are victims, but I think that biological, that relationship, that love for that child is everlasting. And while some of those people in some very angry moments may lose focus and hurt those children, I think that innate love, that relationship of that parent and child, it really makes our job a little bit easier. But I'm going to let Terry talk about that.
Yeah. Of course, I think what hurts the children is the parents fighting. It's not the direct action against the children that usually hurts them.
Absolutely. And we do, you know, have the situation come up very frequently. And there's lots of literature that I have in the office. We have co-parenting. We work on co-parenting skills with these parents, communication skills. We work on the parents learning to take care of themselves and their own emotional needs so that they can be there emotionally for their child. So there's many, many things that we do with these families. I think it helps a lot.
And do you encourage specifically people who are in mediation or talking to a lawyer or in the middle of a divorce proceeding to call you? Could you say that you offer some special experience and expertise in helping families with kids where the family is breaking up?
Absolutely.
Because I think it's a huge service, and that's an underserved population, the 60% of marriages that aren't working.
Right.
That are breaking.
And so many times parents are going through so many, you know, emotional challenges themselves that they're not always thinking of their child at this time, and it's the most important time to think about their child. So, absolutely, we do offer services for parents going through divorce.
And you mentioned that some of your families are referred to you from the legal system. How does that work? What's the background there?
Yeah, I think I'd like to look at it as an education for us, Steve. 10% of our families are referred by the courts, where the children have been removed from the home because they're perceived to be at imminent risk of danger. So these are the cases that we learn from, and we learn the value of why we do what we do every day. The children are removed by the courts. They have to comply with a case plan. We spend a lot of time being the nice guys, since the families typically are very angry that someone has taken their kids away. And that's 10% of the families we work with in three counties. But once again, that's not the thrust of what the Family Partnerships does. We're into prevention, we're into education, we're into support, and that just teaches us on a daily basis what happens absent this support.
All right, so you got Sarasota and Manatee. What's the third county?
DeSoto County, Steve.
How many families do you work with?
We work with over 1,000 families a year, and our programs are all free.
And when Terry is working with families, how many families, Terry, do you work with at one time?
I currently have 25 families that I work with, but on a weekly basis, I normally see around 14 families a week. Some of the families I've worked with for a while, and I might just see once a month. We call that family support and stability. They're people that, you know, I've worked with for quite a while. Some of these, the parents might be disabled, and that's why I continue with them, for a lengthy time.
So, Michelle, do you ever anticipate how you could possibly live without this woman at your side coming in to help you?
I mean, no,
how does this thing come to an end?
I just keep checking with her. You know, I'm not ready to let you go yet. And you know, I just want to address for a second. You asked a few minutes ago, how do you rate the success? How do you see this tangible result? And you know, almost a year ago, we were talking about a little boy who was on the verge of getting thrown out of kindergarten, bless his heart, you know, expelled from kindergarten, if you can imagine, and a mom who was, you know, pulling her hair out every day, wondering, why in the world did God give me a child? You know, I'm not capable of being a parent, which, I mean, how you can even have that thought in your head, and for anybody out there who might be listening, you're not alone, and there is help. And coming to a place where where I have a little boy who's getting 95% in his fish philosophy in first grade, is a star student who is a great friend today, and just a great kid who's happy with life, and myself feeling really confident, knowing with all assurity that I'm a wonderful mom today. You know, and that's just awesome, and I'm so thankful for this organization.
Our guests in the studio this morning are Dave Potter, Executive Director of the Family Partnership Center, and he is joined by Terry Wallace, who is an educator on the staff with the Family Partnership Center, and you've just heard Michelle, a client of theirs, talk about her experience working with Terry and with the Partnership Center.
All right, so I want to mention some superstars who are not with us in the studio, and Barbara is one of them, who just recently was given a big award. Dave, so why don't you grab the mic here. Is it okay if we mention Barbara?
We can mention Barbara, and we can mention your spouse, Nancy, as well, too. We can mention some of the superstars.
So we're talking about Barbara Brownell.
Excuse me, Barbara Brownell was part of, I guess, three or four people that in 1992.
From the beginning,
found
right?
Found that from the beginning. As a volunteer, we didn't pay her for 10 years either, Steve. So she's been a paid employee for 10 years. She's been working for the organization for 17 years. And she just really cares about children. And she has really identified this idea of parenting education and support as a profession.
And helped set up some of the programs. Terry, do you work with Barbara?
Yes, I do. Barbara's my immediate boss. She is in charge of programs.
And does she help set up the structure of the programs and guidelines, paperwork, that kind of stuff?
Yes, she does. She handles, all the paperwork, which makes it much easier for us.
And what was the name of the award? You gave her an award recently. What was that award for?
She's won numerous awards, Steve. She won an award from the National Exchange Club recently just for her involvement in the community. I think Barbara's kind of a unrecognized gem in the community, and she's pretty modest about her successes and has worked with the school district, but she just recently completed 10 years of successful service, but she's received numerous awards. She's published widely on parenting in the area. I would say she's probably one of the outstanding parenting educators in the area.
And then you also mentioned Nancy Norris, my favorite jumping mullet. She's also has a show here on this station, and she was an executive director early on.
She was our first executive director.
Yes. And let's just give some kudos to her because she did some grant writing and got the program up and going, correct?
She did more than that. She stayed on the board after I came around, too, and taught me how to do my job. So she's one of the innovators, one of the founders, and to this day still stays involved with the Family Partnership Center.
All right, let's talk a little bit about funding and where your funding comes from, some details about that.
Yeah, two-thirds of our funding comes from the government right now, and that amount is shrinking, and that's one of the challenges we have right now. Availability of funds. We are not today, nor are we ever going to be the low-cost producer. When you're working with families on a customized basis with master's level or the equivalent experience, you're not going to be the cheapest. You just better be the best, and you better make a difference. So to answer your question specifically, Manatee County government has been a significant funder for a number of years, along with the federal and state government. We're lucky enough to be supported by United Ways in multiple locations. And then my real challenge beyond that is the private foundations, the individuals, the golf tournaments, the special events, and just a lot of caring people. And that's a diminishing resource. So my challenge is to get out there and show the difference that we're making and the value that we produce.
And the golf tournament is one of the big events of the year. When are you having it this year?
Yeah, we've modified it a little bit this year for some economic reasons. So we've gone from a real golf course to a putt-putt, of course. So it's still golf, and we hope to get back to real golf next year, but it's going to be held on October 10th near Carrabba's on Manatee Avenue.
All right. Any other events coming up?
Yeah, one real big one that we're very excited about, and that's Star Spangled Night with a Hollywood theme on November 14th at the Bradenton Yacht Club at 6 o'clock in the evening. The band Shaman is going to be there, and we're expecting 200 people, and we got a pretty lofty goal, but that's going to take some of the sting out of some of the reduced government funding, Steve.
And also now you're getting very, let's say, technologically advanced here. You have a new video out. Everybody's got their video starring Michelle in the video. And Michelle,
hey,
you
were
great. And that video was very well done. So tell us a little bit about the video, and if people want to see it, how can they do that?
Yeah, it's... First of all, our website is www.familypartnership.org.
We have Family Partnership, not Family Partnership Center?
Familypartnership.org. That's correct.
Okay.
We were lucky enough, indirectly through the Rotary Foundation, to meet Stuart Roth and the Center for Faith and Freedom, which is based in Lakewood Ranch. And one of his passions is helping families through the production of DVDs. I think he realizes that that only the charities that get out there and tell their message effectively are going to get funded. And he, for free, and this has a value of about $25,000, has produced DVDs for over 50 local charities. We were lucky enough to be selected, and we were lucky enough to get Michelle to participate with us, and Max to participate with it. And so far, we got a lot of good feedback on it.
Very good, Larry.
Yes, I wanted to know, where are you located?
Once again, headquarters is down pretty close to downtown Bradenton on the corner of 9th and Tamiami Trail. We're everywhere from Arcadia in DeSoto County to Anna Marie Island in Manatee County to Northport in Sarasota County, and we're driving there every day, especially with our in-home program. So we're located. Churches provide free space for the support groups. We're in a number of schools and classrooms. We're in libraries. We're kind of everywhere, and these people have been very generous with us, Larry.
And what do you mean by what do you do in those locations? Do you meet with their clients?
Typically, you know, once again, when we do an intake analysis and decide the needs of this family, if we determine that they do not need in-home service, they can effectively learn by attending a support group, then we'll ask the church or the school to hold a support group on their facilities. And we have a bilingual one, we have a homeless one, we have a number of support groups.
And that's where you use libraries and churches.
And the libraries and churches is for the support groups, as well as what I call the light side of parenting, and that's our musical motion programs, which is really learning while playing. Moms and preschoolers, it's a lot of fun.
And then you have also training programs, education workshops.
Yeah, we have special topic programs. For example, perceive the need, let's say ADHD, we see a need developing there. We want to have one focused strictly on parents so they can not only learn from us, Larry, but they can share their experiences.
And, Michelle, you know, when I saw you in the video, and your story is just so compelling, and I want to give you a little bit more airtime. Let's say, what is the message you would like people to hear, kind of the take-home message of your experience?
The take-home message would be that, you know, I just, as a parent, there's so many struggles that we go through every day, and I think sometimes that we feel like we're alone. We feel like we're the only one, that nobody understands what we're going through, and we might be scared or frightened to reach out for help. You know, we have that little thing going on inside of us called pride. That I should know how to do this, I should be able to handle this, and I'm going to look foolish or feel foolish if I ask for help. Well, it's your responsibility to ask for help, because that little person or people are depending on you. It's your responsibility, and help is available. Not only is it available, it's available for free by loving, caring people who are there for you. There are resources. You need to reach out and grab hold of them and do the best thing that you can do for these little people who are depending on you, who are our future. We need to do the best that we can for them.
Very good. A compelling story.
Yes. Just to remind our listeners, our guests in the studio today are Dave Potter, Executive Director of the Family Partnership Center, Terry Wallace, who's an educator on the staff there, and also a client of theirs, Michelle. And we're talking about the risks in society, and there are lots of situations that families encounter. There's the school system and its attempt to tranquilize kids by putting them on drugs so that they can manage their classrooms better, or mainstream kids, whatever the educational philosophy happens to be. What does a parent do when their child is being recommended for that sort of thing? Or who do you believe, and how do you believe yourself? And then there's, we talked before about divorce, there's bullying, there's violence in the playgrounds, there's all sorts of situations. And then there's, of course, the universal issue of hormones. The kids just are going to go developmentally through periods of obstructionism and whatever you might say, which can lead the school system back to drugging them all. So, hey, I have the perfect way of dealing with developmental normality. Let's drug them. So, but I think within that there is this Oasis. There's this place called the Family Partnership Center where parents can turn and ask the question, what's the right thing to do with me and my kid, and to what extent can I improve this relationship in light of all these other pressures? That's how I'm understanding how you're talking about this.
Before we're too harsh on the school system, we work with some pretty terrific people in the school system as well there. I want to acknowledge that. They're very caring. But anyways, I'm going to turn this over to Terry in a second. But the comment I would make is most of these cases are multivariate in that these families are being challenged from six different directions. And one of the things the Family Partnership Center does as well as anybody is know what we don't know. Largely with Barbara Brownell's background in the community and in the profession, our connections with the other providers in the agencies, whether it be mental health, whether it be addiction, whether it be physical disabilities, we know who to call. So we're a good resource for the community and for providing reference materials. But as far as what we do from a parenting standpoint, maybe I'll ask Terry to comment on these complicated cases.
What you had said earlier was so true as far as typical development. So many times parents do not understand that what their children are going through is age-typical development. And once they realize that, when we go in and, you know, we bring the literature on typical development, they feel so much more relaxed, because at times they think that all of a sudden something horrible has happened to their child and they're not able to understand that. So that is a huge thing for them, just to be able to be relieved that, oh, this is normal development. Okay. And things that they can do to help their child through this development.
I just wanted to, and I don't want to sound harsh on schools, but, you know, there are situations where kids who fly below the radar, they do their homework, they don't ask or demand a lot. Kids who particularly are adept at teaching themselves are the ideals in a lot of school systems. Kids who are rambunctious, who are more creative, impulsive, emotional, passionate, they get in the way of those other families who are trying to fast-track their kids from kindergarten to the university without interference from all of these distractions of, as I call them, rambunctious kids. And when those kids happen to be girls, it's all the more of a problem, because the school system does not have a lot of activities or programs for girls as they might for boys. And I'm talking as a little league coach here too, who sees a lot of kids prayerfully given to the sports programs by parents who are saying, please let there be one place in this community where I can put my kids and let them burn off some steam and basically be themselves in a lot of community programs. So I'm not trying to be critical. It's, I think, much more of a culture of standardizing kids in a certain way and not knowing what to do with kind of the tails of the bell curve.
That is another thing that we do with parents, is we encourage them to be proactive. We encourage them to communicate with their child's teachers and anyone else who works with their children, and for them to know their rights as a parent is very important also. So that's another little side thing that we do.
Larry, one of the point I want to mention, and once again I'll give Barbara Brownell the credit for this, is when Terry is doing her intake and meeting a family for the first time and building a relationship, after she's listened and listened effectively, the next thing she's going to do for probably a couple of visits is continue to talk about, what do you do well? Tell me what you do well. Tell me some more things you do well. Tell me what your child does well. And that's called building on positives. We really, really have a positive approach to parenting, and I think that really works well.
We want to thank our guests, Dave Potter, Terry Wallace, from the Family Partnership Center. Tell us again how to find you.
Once again, okay, if I give a telephone number?
Absolutely.
We're in Bradenton at 941-756-7000. 3007. Our website, which is recently updated, is www.familypartnership.org. And we'd love to hear from you.
That's
from
941-756-3007. And that's DeSoto, Sarasota,
and Manatee County.
And Manatee Counties.